the state and in philosophy. They are Christians first and philosophers afterwards. I would like you to be philosophers first and Christians at the same time. I don't mean to say that you should be Hindus only. You should be God intoxicated. And whether you are Mohammedans or whether you are Christians or whether you are Hindus or anybody else, of any denomination, it doesn't matter. But you be devoted to God. When you are at the same time, you can say, men in this practical world of us, of sense and sensible world. So, Saint Augustine makes Aristotelism a little attenuated, a thinned. And he says that Plotinus is correct in saying that the all soul has to rise to the status of the nous, and the nous has to rise to the status of the one. And he too echoes in the same manner, he has the voices in the same manner, saying that it is a fall from God. It is a fall from God, meaning there is a distance from God. You see. And the maximum distance would be in the vice of a man. The moral degradation of a man, that will be the greatest divergence from God. Afterwards, in the same line comes Anselm. Anselm is considered the father of all ontologism. Ontologism is a big word, don't be afraid of it. Ontos meaning being, and ontologism means the science of the being. You see, being means existence. Now there is a difference between what is existence and essence. The great controversy between what is first, which is whether the essence is first or the existence is first. I shall give you simple examples of it. A flower, a rose flower is there, and the rose attar or the perfume is there. Which is first, I ask you? Whether the essence has been extracted from the flowers, or whether the essence exists first? There is a likewise distinction between the Sankhya philosophy, which we have borrowed even in the Vedanta, as the Tanmatras and the Panchamahabhutas. I shall ask the same question, whether the Panchamahabhutas have come from the Tanmatras or whether the Tanmatras have come from the Panchamahabhutas. It will be difficult for you to answer, of course. I think it is not possible for all to think about it. You will say, yes, the perfume is extracted of the flowers, that the flower comes first and afterwards the perfume which is extracted out of it. But unless I ask, why is it not extracted from this wood? If you ask the question, then you will think, oh, it is from the rose flowers that is extracted, and therefore we call it rose attar. Why not from the wood? It is. Why not from this metal? Why not from the stone in the mortar? Because it doesn't contain the essence. So essence must be first there in the rose flowers. Then it is possible you can extract it. So which is first? Essence is first, you will say. And how is it the flower has come out of it? That is a mystery still. But whatever the mystery, which will you put first? The priority of the essence or the priority of the existence? Then you will say, yes, it appears that way, that there is the essence first. And essence first and existence afterwards. This has been brought out for the first time by Anselm, Saint Anselm. See, that is ontological. It is a transition from the essence to the existence. The rose flower has got within it the potentiality of the perfume, and that is being extracted and then becomes actuality. So the essence becomes the existence afterwards. That can be the proof of the fact that the existence, for example, brings out the essence. Unless the essence is there first, how can you bring out it? How can you bring it out? You cannot bring out from the wood or from the stone or from the sand. You cannot have it. You can have only in the groundnuts oil. But can you just grind sand and extract oil out of it? It is not possible. In the groundnut, it is potentially there. And what is potentially there, you can have an actuality. And exactly what Anselm did was, yes, we have God in idea. And then from idea you can have the transition to reality. It is from potentiality to actuality that is the transition which is possible. Not from actuality to potentiality or from the existence to actuality. This is no doubt in the practical world of space and time. But non-spatial and non-temporal, can there be existence or not? This was the mistake of Aristotle too. He says every existence must consist of form and matter. Existence by existence, Aristotle meant all existences, all existing things bound by space and time. But Aristotle was not aware of there being non-spatial and non-temporal existence. Plato was aware of that, but not Aristotle. You can say, how is it that from matter you go to form? How is it from matter you go to form at all? Unless the form is there already, present in the matter. And you can eliminate the matter and retain the form. There is a picture, it has got form. Nothing exists without the form. And you can just eliminate, at least intellectually, the clear, and then have the form of it. The efficient form, the formal and the final, as Aristotle says. You see varieties of that form. So the efficient cause, the formal cause, and the final cause. As three form as in three varieties. And that, what is that final cause? Final cause is the end for which it is purpose. The picture, for example, consists of a material cause, namely the clay. The efficient cause, namely the potter. The formal cause, namely the shape and the size. And the end, the final cause, meaning bringing the water. For that purpose the picture is made. Similarly, for what purpose is this in this universe made? If you ask that question to Aristotle, he will say, for the purpose of meeting God. But has he shown us the process made? No, he has not shown. He has not shown the way towards that. Aristotle was a man of science. He wanted to only the principles of it, and he didn't show, has not shown. These medieval philosophers have shown us certain ways. For example, Augustine has shown the moral and the spiritual discipline. Augustine has said the same, you see. And Anselm has made bold, that is, to put the spiritual fact in philosophical terms, it is the idea, it is the transition from idea to reality, from potency to actuality, from potential to an act, from what is potential to an, you say, to what is known in space and time, from essence to existence. This has been put by Anselm. Further, if we go to a third philosopher, namely Saint Thomas Aquinas, you find that it is nothing but the elongation of this same line, elongation, the projection of the same line. Saint Thomas Aquinas was a great systematizer, just as Saint Augustine was a great thinker, you see. And Aquinas was a thinker as well as a systematizer. But Saint Thomas Aquinas had to fight on two fronts. If a man has to fight on two fronts, it is more difficult. If a man has to fight only on one front, if you want to have a war against Pakistan, it is difficult. But it is simple. But if you want to have your battle with Burma on the one side, and you can say the Burmese, Chinese on the one side, and Pakistan on the west, on the other, it will be most difficult. But Saint Thomas Aquinas had to do this. He had to fight the battle on two fronts. What were the two fronts? One were the conservative clergy. And another was the, you can say, the Aristotelianism. He was a great intellect. Saint Thomas Aquinas was very, one of the most prominent philosophers of the medieval ages. He was absolutely convinced about the truth of Aristotelianism. But he was more interested in Christianity. He was more interested in Christianity, though he was certain that Aristotelianism is not wrong. He was not a pragmatic, that whatever is useful is real. All pragmatism is a topsy-turvy reality. You see, whatever is useful is real. You see, you to burn this building is also useful because it will give us a very good light, which will be. That will be pragmatism, no doubt. But no, it should not be demolished. It is the property, the common property of all the students and the university. If you think that way, then it is the truth that this may not be burned. And he was great intellect. He saw by his intellect that Aristotelian cannot be touched. Whatever Aristotle has said is perfectly correct. St. Thomas Aquinas was convinced of this. And yet he has an interest in Christianity. Naturally, his mind, his heart went with Christianity and his head went with Aristotle. He had to fight on two fronts. He has to wage the battle on two fronts. You see. On one hand, he thought that Aristotle was correct. On the other hand, he said Christianity should be great. The church ought to be have the superior, the church more useful, more valuable than the state. Why should it be? Cut out the stage at all and be a philosopher only and say that Aristotle is correct. But that was the difficulty before St. Thomas Aquinas. He made theology superior to the state and to philosophy. He didn't combine philosophy and theology. He had not that, you can say, that ability in him. You can. Unless Plato had that, unless kings become philosophers and philosophers kings, there will not be an ideal state. That is what Plato said, you see. But Thomas Aquinas had not this courage to say that unless the churchmen, the clergy becomes Aristotelian and the Aristotelians become the bishops, there will not be the spiritual heaven for man. He had not that courage or that insight of bringing together the state and the church together. Therefore, he gave prominence to church and gave a stepmotherly treatment to Aristotelianism. But if you want Aristotelianism to be understood, you must read Thomas Aquinas. Otherwise, it is not possible to understand the Aristotle system as a whole. Aristotle has a great man of science. He is the father of all sciences. You see, there was nothing under the sun of which he did not know, and he made use of everything. Aristotle was such a great man, towering personality, no doubt. But St. Thomas Aquinas was interested in the church, and therefore he thought little of Aristotelianism. But being a very clever man, he said Aristotelianism is correct. He didn't say Aristotelianism is useful. Aristotelianism is absolutely correct. Yet there is a higher truth, namely the church, namely the clergy, that Christ is greater. Why? I give you one example only and it was on. Aristotle thought of God as the unmoved mover of the universe, as the demiurge, a semi-god in Plato, for example. Did Aquinas think like this? That there are many gods? Or that there is the highest God sitting beyond the clouds? That was the point. He has to make it once for all, you see, whether you are for Aristotle or whether you are for the church. And then ultimately he said, I am for the church, my friend. I am for the church. Then condemn Aristotle. You see, you can't eat the bread and have it at the same time. You can't have Aristotelianism and church. If that be the dilemma before you, then what would you do? You would have to prefer one at the sacrifice of the other. St. Thomas sacrificed Aristotelianism in spite of the fact that he was convinced of the truth of Aristotelianism. But mark it, however, you have to be so careful about your philosophical attitude. Whatever comes in your way, you must not mind it. You must have an objective attitude, not at all subjective. Some St. Thomas actually suffered from his subjective leanings towards Christianity. He had not that objective courage, as you say, for looking to Aristotelianism. He didn't put Aristotelianism over, but he put theology over philosophy. He put theology over philosophy. Such occurrences happen. Even in India, it occurred once, I tell you. Probably it's an digression, but I make use of it. There was a theosophical movement, as some of you must be knowing, with Annie Besant in India and Leadbitter in Africa. There was a theosophical movement. Of course, the word theosophy, sophy, means knowledge, science, and theos meaning God, science of God. Naturally, many learned persons, many enlightened persons, many philosophers, you see, went to Annie Besant and sat at her feet. But I tell you, it was Professor Faraday who went to Banaras, saw Annie Besant, Harry Wing, and when he showed the photograph of his guru, Annie Besant was convinced of the spiritual greatness of the guru. And she said to Professor Faraday, "You are in safe hands." She was honest to that extent. But doesn't mean that because she was honest, we should say it that way. It was Tilak who said that don't believe this woman. She has a loyalty towards Christianity. It was Tilak who said this. You see, in one of his articles, he wrote a very big article. I read it, and some of it says, "You know, you should not trust this. She has a Christian mission in hand." And it was Tilak who sensed that mention. And Professor Sanjay came back to his guru and showed the photo of Annie Besant. Then the guru said, "Yes, she knows something of yoga. She knows elementary yoga." That was it. But Annie Besant was considered the fountainhead of theosophy, and there are theosophical lodges all over India even today. This occurs on account of your interest. When your heart is set up upon things, when an ordinary woman will look to you as the first woman in life, as the first model for Brahmadev women. In the Meghadut also it has been Kalidas says that. What is that? Ya tatrasya tibati visaye srishti radhe vadhatu. That wife of Guhyaka was considered by Kalidas as the first model for Brahmadev to create women in the world. Was it that way? Because Kalidas was also washed away by the stream of sexual love. And therefore he saw in that woman, in that imaginary woman of Vyaga, that he was Ya Tatrasyat Yuvati Vishaye Srishti Radeva Dhatu. She was even before the creation as model for Brahmadev to create women in the world. This was the verdict of Kalidas, among the greatest poet. But poet was not a philosopher. He had only fancy. He had only, yes, he was not a philosopher. He was not a thinker. Otherwise, he would not have written like this. Kalidas was only a dream. He wanted probably that woman, but he could not get it. So that he had written it about her, that's all. Srishti Radeva Dhatu. What do we think? This has happened about... What I say is, what I came to, what is the link, please? I was teaching about? Why did this digression occur?
Because of subjective meaning.
Yes, exactly right. The subjective meanings of St. Thomas were for church. So, he was attracted more by his heart, not by his head. But as students of philosophy, I wish that all of you should give more importance to your head than to your heart. Than to your heart. Be greater than Thomas Aquinas, and then you will be philosophers. Otherwise, you will fall in the same rut and just say that Yuvati Vishaye Srishti Radhe Vadhatu. You see, this is not. Your philosophy must impinge its soul upon theology. But his theology was better. The conservative theology and Aristotelianism. He fought on two fronts. He could have fought on one front, and then he could have seen what is wanting in one and not wanting in the other. But he fought at the same time on two fronts, and his heart was set on one and his head was set on another. So the head proved to be inferior to the heart, you see. Inferior to the heart. It should not be otherwise. The head must be superior to the heart, you see. The head must be, as Plato has said, the head must be superior to the heart, because the heart, the head is the seat of the philosopher, the heart is the seat of the warrior, you see. Therefore, you must be above the warriors also, above the warriors. The king, it is the king's seat. You should not give it to any other man. To the philosopher alone you must reserve, you see. And that should be. The state should govern the church, not the church should govern the state. It is the state should govern the church. It is the reason should govern this, whatever happens in this world, not any other thing. But in a country like India, anything may happen. Whether the head, it is immaterial to us and as Indians, whether the head governs us or the heart governs us or the lower parts governors. It is immature because we have the fullest freedom possible. You see. That is, by the way, I am telling you that it is not so. If you want to be true students of philosophy, you must be guided by your head and not by your heart. Unfortunately, St. Thomas Aquinas was guided by the heart. And therefore he put theology, the Christian theology, before. And the instance of it is that he made God the creator of the universe, rather than the unmoved mover of the universe. Just see the difference between two expressions. Aristotle says that he is the unmoved mover of the universe. And St. Thomas says he is the creator of the universe. Naturally, we are all creatures bound by the ties of allegiance and love towards that Almighty. We can't go against that. We must obey Him. We must serve Him. We must be devoted to Him. We must be loyal to Him. We must be loyal to the Church and not to the state. That's what he said. This is St. Thomas Aquinas. I think I have given over it over. And I should begin next time to the modern philosophy, beginning with Descartes. So yesterday I finished the ancient philosophy of Plato and Aristotle. Today I finished the medieval philosophy of Plotinus, Augustine, Anselm, and St. Thomas. Next time we shall finish the philosophy from Descartes to Kant. And afterwards, post-Kantian and the post-Hegelian philosophy, down up to Pringle, Patterson, and etc. Thank you, gentlemen.
Professor Date and friends, I express my sense of gratitude to Professor Date for giving us such an inspiring, ennobling, an enlightening lecture. I may frankly say that I have become more clear about Plotinus today by listening to Professor Date's two points over Plotinus, namely the relation between the